humancapitalmanagement.org.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
Away from your radio? Listen to Federal News Radio directly on your desktop. Click the red Listen Now button near the top of the federalnewsradio.com homepage.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us, and this is going to be a timely show. As you heard, the dreaded shutdown, government-wide shutdown, has been kicked down the road for a couple of weeks, but we still need to be planning for it. And we're going to be talking today with Vitol Skevchinsky. He is with the Social Security Administration Council of the American Federation of Government Employees and AFGE members around the country, and we'll get some more detail from him on this, but around the country are rallying at Social Security offices to let customers and employees know what's happening with Social Security, the possibilities of a shutdown, and what happens about budget cuts and how that will impact this very large, very important agency that directly touches the lives of about one in every six Americans at least once a month when they get their checks or payments. After we talk to Vitol, we'll be going to Steve Watkins and Sean Riley from the Federal Times and get their latest on the shutdown, what they're hearing from people, what's likely to happen, what feds can expect, and what imponderables are out there. So it's going to be a good show. As always, we're following the money. Now we'll go to Vitol Skevchinsky with the American Federation of Government Employees. Vitol, are you with us?
Yes, good morning.
Hey, thank you for taking time out. I know you have some urgent business beginning at 10:30. What's going on today?
Well, Social Security employees are upset with regards to the budget that was passed by the House of Representatives, which would reduce the FY11 budget requests from the president by $1.7 billion. The effect of passage of that by the entire Congress would be, according to the Commissioner of Social Security, would be a furlough of a month for all Social Security employees. Now, this is at a time when we are having substantial increased workloads, due to the economic situation, which is causing more individuals to file for early retirement and more individuals who have been laid off to consider filing disability benefits. So we've had increased claims in both areas. And also due to the baby boom generation coming of age who are eligible for retirement benefits now, and we're getting more and more claims than we have in the past. So at the same time as we are having more work, the House of Representatives have decided to cut our administrative budget.
Well, not now, to put too much. Excuse me. When they're talking about a month, is this a 30-day month, a 20-day workday month?
I mean, 20 to 23 days is what I calculate the number of workdays in a month. And that's what we're telling our folks, that according to the commissioner, we could be furloughed for up to 23 days. So what has happened is many employees have come to us, the union, and said, we need to protest this. We've got to do something about it. So what we've done is we've asked employees around the country to do some informational picketing today. And we have 96 locations around the country right now that will be having such events around lunchtime, where Social Security employees, as well as our allies, Save Our Social Security, other interest groups who care about what's happening in the Social Security Administration will be joining us. Our friends in labor, other labor unions will be joining us and at many of these sites. And they'll be out with signs, talking to the media, and distributing information to SSA customers about the impact of the potential impact of a furlough on their ability to get service from Social Security.
Vitol, I don't know if you're familiar with the term Washington Monument cut, but it's been around D.C. forever. And the idea is that if a federal agency's funds are cut by Congress or they're threatened to be cut, that, say, for instance, it's the Interior Department, which runs the National Park Service, which runs the Washington Monument. And so the Interior would say, okay, you're going to cut our budget. We're going to shut down all the national parks and shut down the Washington Monument right at the height of tourist season. And the idea is this gets the attention of the public, and in turn they protest to Congress, and Congress restores the funds. A month of furlough, is there any other way Social Security could save $1.7 billion?
Well, this is coming from the commissioner. You know, this isn't my conjecture on my part that that's what's going to happen if there's a cut of $1.7 billion from the president's request. This is the commissioner telling the House Ways and Means Social Security Subcommittee staff that would be what would happen. Now, the methodology of doing that is unknown. We had a briefing. The union had a briefing 2 days ago where we got very little information from the agency on how they would do this. Now we're talking the briefing about a government shutdown. If there was a government shutdown, the agency has yet to identify whether they're going to declare employees critical and force us to work, or whether they're going to just shut down. We don't even know what their plan is. And with regards to furloughs, for budgetary reasons, if we got an inadequate budget, we don't know either yet whether they would actually close offices, work on short staff, shut offices a day a week, or there's a variety of techniques they could use to do this, and they have yet to indicate what their plans are.
It seems to me during the last shutdown, the 1995-96 shutdown, that initially, in the first shutdown, Social Security let about 50 to 55,000 people go. That is, they were declared non-essential and they went home. And then with the second round of the shutdown, they brought in about 55,000 people. And there were only about 5,000 furloughed. But you have no feel as to how many people will be working or will be told to go home?
We had a two-hour meeting Monday, asked a series of questions, and we were told that those decisions haven't been made yet, which is curious because absent this 10-day, this two-week extension, the funding would have run out as of Friday, and as of Monday, the agency would have had to take some action. But they're apparently, what they're telling us is they haven't decided what to do, either that or they're reluctant to tell us. Which has caused a lot of stress with the employees. The employees are unsure of what their status is, whether they'll be working or not working. They're unsure whether they're going to get paid or not paid. And our employees, many of them took jobs at Social Security, not only just to take a job, but because they care about the program and they care about the beneficiaries that we service, the claimants that we service, and they're very concerned about the impact of a shutdown or a partial shutdown on our ability to provide service to the public.
Yeah, well, shutting down, if the maximum is 23 days, that would be 1 day a week for half of the year right there. Just to be clear about this, now, federal workers, of course, are not allowed to strike. It's against the law, but they are allowed to participate in informational picketing, I assume, when they're off duty. And you say you're going to have people at 96 Social Security offices around the country?
96 Social Security offices. Some of them are large, like the headquarters complex here in Baltimore. We're having a rally at 11:30. Some of them are small, such as a field office in McAllen, Texas, or El Paso, Texas, or Pottsville, Pennsylvania. So we have a variety of sites, which include our processing centers, our large processing centers, our Wilkes-Barre Data Operations Center, which has about 1,100 employees in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and small field offices and hearings offices. So a variety of sites where people are going to be doing informational picketing. This will be on their lunch periods. This is not work time. Some people, will take leave to extend their lunch in order to participate for a longer period of time. So it's our goal to inform the public and inform Congress and inform the American people that the budget proposals and the budget that passed the House would do incalculable damage to the ability of the Social Security Administration to service the public, and that if Congress passes that kind of budget, you can expect significant delays in getting through on our 800 number service. There'll be less people to answer the phone, in getting waiting in line to Social Security offices. They'll either be closed for some days, or there'll be less people in the office to take interviews, and consequently, with the with having less hours to do our work, our disability claims and our retirement claims processing times will increase. And the hearings situation, we've had a lot of bad publicity recently about the length of time it takes to process a disability appeal through a hearing stage, and we've been able to cut our processing time from over 500 days to the high 300s, but that will begin to deteriorate if we don't have sufficient staff. A lot of the work that went into cutting down that processing time was through hiring additional staff. You just can't do that work. It's very labor-intensive.
Yeah, so much of it is paper.
You can't do that work without enough people to do it.
Vito, listen, thank you very much for being on. Given the importance of Social Security to so many people, I would suspect that, particularly in smaller towns, this will lead the 6 o'clock news, the rallies in the different Social Security offices, and be page one in the newspaper tomorrow. So thank you, sir, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay. See you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM talking with Steve Watkins and Sean Riley from the Federal Times.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday mornings at 10, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
For America's wounded warriors, sometimes coming home can be a battle in itself. Every one of them needs our support to meet the challenges they face every day. The USO provides Americans a way to offer that support to our wounded warriors and their families. Join us. Visit USO.org to learn how you can make a difference in their lives. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
A new report from the Office of Personnel Management says federal agency employees were already increasing their use of telework even before a new law designed to encourage the practice kicked in. OPM's Status of Telework report says there were 11,000 more teleworkers in the federal government in 2009 than in 2008. That translates to around 10% of all agency workers who are eligible for telework and 5% of the overall federal workforce under an established telework policy. But based on surveys, OPM says 22% of all federal workers teleworked to some extent. The Telework Enhancement Act, passed last year, requires every agency to designate a telework managing officer, and by June, every federal employee should be told whether or not they're telework eligible.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
FLIR Systems has a singular focus on providing thermal imaging night vision systems for search and rescue, surveillance, and force protection across the globe. We proudly support the men and women who serve, defend, and protect by providing leading-edge technology to enhance mission success. Today, customers trust in FLIR Systems' thermal imaging products and rely on our responsive support worldwide. Visit FLIR.com/GS for more details. FLIR Systems, extraordinary vision for extraordinary heroes.
The website of the week is the Google Transparency Report. Now, this site includes an interactive map, so you can click on different countries. The Chinese officials consider censorship demands to be state secrets, so we cannot disclose that information at this time. This can show traffic patterns. If a country blocks internet access, you can immediately see this. You can see if any countries are blocking internet traffic. The Google Transparency Report.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions, like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
Federal Managers Association invites all federal managers, supervisors, and executives to its 73rd National Convention and Training Seminar, Federal Managers Turning Policy into Action. On Tuesday, March 15th in Arlington, Virginia, federal managers will gather for engaging presentations including Hiring Reform, What It Means to Managers, The Future of Supervisory Training, and Managing a Telework Workforce. For more details, visit fedmanagers.org. That's fedmanagers.org.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn with Mike Causey. And my guests coming up are Steve Watkins, he's editor of the Federal Times, and Sean Riley, who is a senior writer with Federal Times. Gents, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Mike.
Hey,
good morning.
Thank you. Glad to have you. Listen, you heard we just talked with Vital Skevchinsky of AFGE's Social Security Lodges about the demonstrations they're having. He said at 96 offices, Social Security offices around the country, so they will be both large and small, and I suspect it's going to garner a lot of press because people are very interested in Social Security. Before we get to talking about shutdowns and whatnot, Sean, you broke the story about the Social Security Administration encouraging eligible employees to retire. Could you tell us a little bit about that, and is this connected to the potential budget cuts from the House?
The Social Security Administration is downplaying that speculation. The offer went out last Friday, and essentially it's to all eligible employees within the Social Security Administration. This would be people who have at least, I believe, 20 years service and are 50 or older. Social Security Administration says it's been doing something similar like this almost every year since the mid-90s, although in the past, not all employees have been eligible. For example, administrative law judges who hear disability appeals have not always been eligible in the past. They will be eligible this time, and that's raising some questions, as Mr. Kwasinski, I think, alluded to, about whether what impact this would have on reducing a longstanding backlog of disability claims.
Well, that's true. And in buyouts and early outs in the past, at one point, the very first ones were agency-wide, but they quickly found that was not a good move, and they would target it to specific occupations, sometimes grades and sometimes geographic areas. So this is agency-wide and one of the biggest agencies in government.
That's right. And one question we haven't, the answer is still a little unclear to us, is that, you know, the Social Security Administration says this is a workforce management tool, that what this allows them to do is that as people retire from administrative positions, those resources, essentially the money, the funding, can be redirected to hire more people in jobs that directly serve the public. But when you make this kind of offer agency-wide, what you risk, of course, is that people who are in those service positions are going to leave, too. And so it may not have the impact, you know, may not have the benefits of improving service to the public that you might expect.
No, the Postal Service had that problem 10 years or more ago when they had a agency-wide buyout and a lot of key management people left, and they had to backfill those jobs. So mm-hmm. Congress, in effect, told them, you'll never have another buyout. I'm not sure that that'll hold, but this is tricky stuff.
It is difficult. I mean, when you do these kinds of offers, if they're not specifically targeted, you don't have control over who's going to leave, and you may lose some of your best people or the people you want to hold on to.
Well, you know, there also is talk, in the House budget about cutting the Internal Revenue Service. Does that make sense?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. I think these are primarily Republicans, of course, who are proposing to cut IRS. Their argument is, I think, that everybody's having to, you know, the federal government's having to go on a diet. No one should be immune from that. But at the same time, I mean, there's evidence that by hiring additional IRS folks, you know, particularly say in enforcement, you're going to get a significant return on investment in terms of increased tax collections, in terms of narrowing this quote unquote tax gap, which is the difference between the amount of taxes owed and the amount actually paid. So you could say that by cutting the IRS, you're actually costing the government money, but that's an issue that's currently in dispute.
Well, you see figures that the IRS takes in about $10 for every dollar it spends, so that's pretty good return on your money.
Yeah, absolutely. absolutely. I mean, it's hard to argue with that. If, assuming that math is correct, it's hard to argue with it.
Could this be that it seems that under the Republicans, the Democrats sort of bring functions in government, Republicans take them out, and before they've hired these private debt collectors to get money that they said the IRS couldn't or wouldn't raise and give them a percentage of the take they brought in, and that's gone with great fanfare for a couple of years, and then Congress kills it and it comes back. Is that coming back?
I haven't heard any discussion of that, and one other issue that I recall was involved in that debate was privacy concerns, essentially that you were giving private companies access to confidential taxpayer data, and perhaps there was increased risk that data might be released inappropriately. So I think that's a side issue there, but I have not heard any direct discussion of that, and I would assume the Obama administration would likely be opposed to it.
Yeah, it would be in pattern with what they've been saying. Now to the subject du jour, the shutdown. Despite all the media hype and whatnot, this is a very real threat. It was averted, or apparently will be averted today if the Senate accepts the House version of this 2 week, or is it 3 week delay? But we're still going to be coming back to it. And
yeah,
I know you guys have researched this ad nauseum.
Yeah, exactly. The Senate is expected to pass this. Of course, the president is expected to sign it. But as you say, this is very much a temporary measure. The same debate that's kind of led to this still exists, and you still have some very strong opinions on all sides about how much cutting can be done in this fiscal year. So I expect we're going to be revisiting this over the course of the next 2 weeks and probably beyond that, I would expect.
Well, I did a column earlier this week that was inspired by you guys, and the headline said, "This is not your father's shutdown." And after talking with you last week, it dawned on me, and as you said, that this is going to be a very different shutdown in the numbers of people impacted, the number of people who are now teleworking, the number of people who are involved in national security, who are in potentially exempt jobs. And, of course, I guess the scariest thing of all, you raised the specter that feds might not get paid this time, because in the past, every other furlough or shutdown that we've had, the government, after it's over, has said it wasn't the employee's fault, so they will be paid for the time they didn't work. But given the mood of Congress and the public and portions of the press, I guess it's a very real possibility, without hyping the story, that they might say, well, if they're offered 5 or 10 days, we'll consider that a furlough and not pay them.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's far from a given. Obviously, the Congress is very split on this, and it could be part of the negotiation, actually, as to, in terms of whatever the deal is struck at the end of the day on how to complete the rest of the year, it may be part of that deal as to whether the feds get paid in the end. And it might be a case, for instance, where maybe Congress agrees to pay those feds who are retained as essential or non-accepted, I guess is what they call it now. Pay them, but for the ones who are sitting at home, maybe they won't get paid. So I think that's completely up in the air.
That's right, because in the past, I think they called them essential or emergency workers the last time around, but in the past they had to work and their colleagues were sent home and for a total of 21 days, and then at the end of the day, Congress voted the money, they voted to pay everybody, so the people who worked in some cases felt doubly put upon. Others said they were glad to do it, but it doesn't seem like a good way to run a business.
Yeah, and the figure I've heard, and we tried to look into this, how much money actually was paid to feds who were furloughed, who were not working in the last shutdown. The figure we've heard is $1 billion, basically. But I don't know how much faith to put in that figure. But that's what we've heard so far.
As Everett Dirksen once said, a billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon you're talking real money. Yeah, that is frightening. And again, too, I think a lot of people would argue that the government actually takes a loss in this because of lost productivity and delays and things and complaints and having to catch up once the furlough is over.
Oh, there's so much mismanagement and inefficiency that is driven by this. And I, to be honest, I'm not quite clear how much even Congress is aware of that. But you know, contracts get postponed in short increments. You know, as we heard earlier, the backlog that at agencies like Social Security Administration, you know, start building up again, and a lot of the progress that's been made, and specifically at Social Security, but at other agencies as well, and trying to catch up on some of these backlogs that they're dealing with, just gets blown out of the water.
Well, Congress seems to be maybe the epicenter of reinventing the wheel. You know, it'll be 15 after 10 or 15 years when something happened and it turned out to be a failure or a mini disaster. All of the people who remember that or who knew about it are gone or have moved on, and you have so many new faces in this Congress that they really, I think it would be safe to say, the average member of Congress doesn't have a clue as to what a shutdown would mean. They're looking at it as a, I guess, a bargaining chip rather than as a way to actually save money.
And I think you're exactly right. And you know, you could say the same for just the today, the continuing resolution. There's a lot of agencies out there that are certainly not operating as they normally would. Hiring freezes are underway on a broad level. Travel is essentially being brought to a halt. A lot of the Defense Department, of course, has been highly vocal in outlining all the maintenance and operating and training programs that are essentially being frozen.
Well, you mentioned when we talked about this before the fact that the nature of the government has changed dramatically since 1995-96, primarily, I guess, because of 9/11 and the changing world threat going from Cold War to the situation we have now. So do you envision, if there is a shutdown, that fewer people will be furloughed simply because they are in essential jobs?
I think fewer as a percentage of the total government workforce, yes. In terms of an absolute number, I don't know how much of a difference there would be there. But clearly government is much bigger than it was 15 years ago. But much of that growth has been in the national security and the homeland security. We didn't talk about homeland security 15 years ago. It's a whole new part of the government that's quite big.
Right. Transportation Security Administration did not exist.
Yeah.
Need to take a short break here. When we come back, I want to ask you guys to sort of take us through what's likely to happen during a furlough. We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Any agency, all of these missions, all of these community clouds are going to need software development services, so that needs to be a horizontal type of a cloud. And the key element of tying these together is critical from an overall efficiency standpoint, and that is the use of open standards-based approach within the cloud model from a technology standpoint. And this is something that VMware is taking a leadership position on, which will allow then the applications to be developed in these horizontal community clouds to be easily progressed through the development to the test cycle."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink.
There are reports from Iran that protesters have again taken to the streets. Sources say the Iranian government has cleverly refrained from deadly force, instead injuring protesters and sending them to hospitals. Several sources report men and women wearing doctors' and nurses' uniforms were actually roaming the halls of the hospitals, but they were actually members of the notorious Basiji, or auxiliary police who work for the government. I'm J.J. Green.
There's a saying that lightning never strikes the same place twice. Airport operators know that's not the case, which is why they rely on Arink to provide the most advanced lightning warning systems available. It allows personnel to get to safety, then back out on the tarmac in the shortest amount of time to keep you moving. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
What is HUD's financial management strategy? How is HUD using financial data to inform its management decision-making process? And how is HUD transforming the way it does business? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these questions and more with Doug Criscitiello, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
I'm Dr. Linda Van Eldick, a biomedical scientist supported by the American Health Assistance Foundation. I conduct research aimed at discovering new and effective treatments for Alzheimer's disease. This is critical because more than 1,000 Americans develop Alzheimer's every day. At our website, you can learn how to live with or care for someone with the disease. Call 1-800-437-2423 or go to ahaf.org for a free brochure on understanding Alzheimer's disease.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. This week, my special guest will be Steve Abramowitz, director of Accelerant. The show is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, located on the web at ofplaw.com. For more information on the firm, call us at 703-218-2100.
Profile America, Wednesday, March 2nd. Most new cars offer navigation systems to help owners reach their destinations, but we still depend on the signs along the highways. Though we take them for granted, they weren't always there. By the 1920s, the number of cars was growing rapidly, but driving was a nightmare. There were no standard signs on the nation's more than 3 million miles of roads, and many had no signs at all. On this date, 86 years ago, state and federal officials met to solve the problem. They came up with standard signs and numbers. Highways running north and south had odd numbers, and those going east and west were given even numbers. Today, there are more than 4 million miles of roads in the U.S., about 47,000 of them in the interstate highway system. Profile America is in its 14th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey. I'm talking with Steve Watkins. He is editor of the Federal Times, and Sean Riley, a senior writer for the Federal Times. And the subject du jour, of course, is, as you would expect, the shutdown. Gents, I got an interesting email here that maybe lead into the next question. It says, I'm a longtime Fed who went through the 96 shutdown. Because our sector has a lives and property function, we worked through the last furlough while our managers declared themselves non-essential and enjoyed some family time, which was later paid as everyone expected. No biggie. I've been proud of my job and glad to be recognized as essential for the nation. My group is always available to be called on and does work at odd hours in addition to our normal time to protect our infrastructure and ensure our functions work 24/7. This time around, everybody expects the furloughs may well be unpaid. I was informally told by my management that I would be on call for any essential emergency issues, but furloughed other times, and to have my cell phone on at all times. In addition, rumor, to be fair, has it that the majority of management has decided this time around they will be essential. I don't want to bring any publicity about my agency, so just sign me anywhere, any Fed anywhere. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it just illustrates the uncertainty that exists out there, the unclarity about exactly who's going to be affected, what's going to happen in the event of a furlough. Very few people that we've talked to you might think are plugged into what's happening really have any idea what the plan is. Agencies are, you know, they all say they have plans, they're working on their plans, but I think there still remains a lot of uncertainty as to who's going to be affected and who isn't, how essential and non-essential or accepted and non-accepted, as they say, is going to be defined. And I think you know, that creates a lot of uncertainty for managers themselves in terms of how to go about making this a smooth transition. And remember, that's part of the deal. When the government shuts down, You know, the agency managers have to make it a smooth transition. They have to ensure that buildings are not going to be left unsecure, and computer systems are going to be left unsecure, and so forth. So.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, you could have a very large building that would have to be heated and electricity and everything else, and maybe one or two people working in it.
Yeah, exactly, and contractors are going through the same questions. They're trying to find out from their contracting officers at the agencies they work for how they are going to be affected. And it really is quite a period of uncertainty for everybody associated with the federal government right now.
Well, back in the day, and this would go back to the time when Senator Roth, he of the Roth IRA, but he was a Republican from Delaware, and he was a chairman of the Senate committee that oversaw civil service matters, they had some sort of a freeze, and it was to be an absolute freeze. And I think the second day they exempted the Defense Department, and the third day they exempted the Post Office, Postal Service, and then the Veterans Administration, and then the IRS, and it got to be laughable except for the exercise and futility, and finally they had narrowed it down to five or six federal agencies, maybe like the Panama Canal Commission and American Battle Monuments Commission that were covered by this freeze, and that seems to happen every time, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a trial and error, exactly, and every day that there's a shutdown, agencies are going to make, continue to make those decisions. Well, can we really go further with that office being shut down? Maybe we should call those folks back and vice versa. So yes, we're talking about kind of this period of uncertainty for feds right now. I think it goes beyond just the shutdown, and that is the bigger discussion underway, or maybe it's not underway, and that's part of the problem. But between the the Tea Party Republicans and the Democrats and the White House, as to how do we get out of this, and what are going to be the components of a deal that essentially put an end to this ridiculous way of governing. For instance, there's a lot of questions about how is a spending bill going to, what is it going to look like to keep government running for the remainder of the year? And one question I have is whether there's going to be any federal pay benefit or collective bargaining dimensions to this, and I would expect to see that certainly from the House side. So I think there's not only uncertainty surrounding what a shutdown is going to look like, but once they resolve the issue and decide how to proceed with funding government, what is that going to look like? And I think there's some bigger questions relating to that.
Yeah, well, you're looking into what's happening in a number of states right now. I guess you could say as Wisconsin goes, so goes the nation. Got an interesting comment here, and I've been looking at your comments on your Federal Times website and as well as checking ours. This one came to us, to me, and it's from Brian in Hamilton, Ohio. He says, all Schedule C and political appointees in the government during a shutdown should be placed in non-pay status. Benefits would lapse, seniority time would freeze, any congressional immunities would be suspended, all privileges, parking at Reagan National Airport, would be suspended. This guy knows his government.
Yeah.
And the law that would implement this would be written in such a way that there would be no makeup once the budget was passed. Right now, the people who get hurt the most are longtime civil servants. I'm retired foreign service, and taxpayers needing normal government services. But the politicos in both Congress and the executive branch probably managed to exempt themselves as emergency workers. So this is the government equivalent of the financial crisis psychology, with banks / mortgages going out of business, but the top-level folks with golden parachutes. Very interesting comment.
Well, it's funny. Back to your line about this is not your father's shutdown.
Uh-huh.
One thing that seems to be different this time is the Senate, the same day, I think this was yesterday, I believe, they passed a bill that essentially would exempt the president and members of Congress from being paid, or would ensure that they are not paid in the event of a shutdown. So I think there's an acknowledgement among politicians that they also have to be carry some of the burden here.
That would be interesting, and I guess they could withhold funds from the president too. Of course, the problem is, particularly in the Senate now, you're talking about a growing millionaires club. I mean, there are a number of people up there on Capitol Hill who could afford to go a long time without getting paid.
Yeah, exactly, on the Senate. I don't think they're going to miss their pay.
Yeah, and I mean, you have them sleeping in the offices as it is now, so they don't really need it. Can you go through I've got to take a break. When we come back, I want to ask you to go through what a typical day would be like or not be like for federal workers in the event of a shutdown. Be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Captain John Felker, Deputy Commander, U.S. Coast Guard Cyber Command, commented during the panel discussion titled Cyber Hire, Ramping Up the Cyber Workforce.
We offer a chance to do really cool stuff and have it be government sanctioned. So certified ethical hacker is one of the most widely sought after skill sets from some of my workforce.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
New cyber threats emerge every day. To stay ahead of the ever-evolving threat environment, organizations must develop a strong cybersecurity workforce. The highly trained and qualified cybersecurity workers, managers, and leaders who are critical to addressing current and future challenges. Booz Allen Hamilton, strategy and technology consultants, possess deep experience helping organizations develop all aspects of a cybersecurity workforce across human capital management, awareness and communications, education and training, and leadership development. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
FLIR Systems has a singular focus on providing thermal imaging night vision systems for search and rescue, surveillance, and force protection across the globe. We proudly support the men and women who serve, defend, and protect by providing leading-edge technology to enhance mission success. Today, customers trust in FLIR Systems' thermal imaging products and rely on our responsive support worldwide. Visit FLIR.com/GS for more details. FLIR Systems, extraordinary vision for extraordinary heroes.
Right now, you're being asked to connect doctors, patients, and providers online. Keep health data safe and secure, and prepare for emerging health threats. Yes, if you're in government, your healthcare plate is heaped full. Turn to Deloitte. We have the people, insight, and experience to help you solve the most critical healthcare issues and help government help America. Insights and opportunities at Deloitte.com/federal.
Hi, I'm Neil Asbury, host of The Neil Asbury Show. Please join me and my guests each week as we discuss the importance of international trade, entrepreneurialism, small business ownership, job creation, and the American dream.
The Neil Asbury Show, Saturday mornings at 8 on Federal News Radio. The Neil Asbury Show, sponsored by AIT Worldwide Logistics, Yoakum Shore and Trossaven, and WTS, Withers Worldwide Transportation Systems.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join host Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life and Himalaya Herbal Healthcare.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday mornings at 10, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Do only dogs hear dog whistles?
You can
enjoy multi-car safety feature and good driver discounts when you switch to GEICO. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
For 11 years, government leaders have gathered to explore the latest mandates and best practices at the Government Performance Summit. Today, with a major revision to the Government Performance and Results Act, there is an unparalleled opportunity to integrate analytics into better decision-making for the entire nation. Join hosts the Performance Institute, FMA, AGA, and GovEvents, April 4th through the 6th for the 11th Annual Government Performance Summit. Space is limited, so register today at governmentperformance.org.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey. I'm talking with Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times, and Sean Riley, senior writer for the Federal Times. And just got, I've been looking at your comments section and our comments section here at Federal News Radio, and one of ours is from a contrarian. He was reacting to a column I had written about don't shoot yourself in the foot during this this shutdown. Don't do something to, you know, that was, they say, cut off your nose to spite your face. And contrarian here says, don't waste hours or days applying for unemployment benefits unless Congress says you're not going to get paid. My guess is that 72% of the feds will not be furloughed. This may be tough for the 28% of you that have to decide what to do. But he's saying don't panic with this thing. Be prepared, but don't panic. Suppose the furlough does take place, or I'm sorry, the shutdown does take place 2 weeks from today. What's likely, what's the scenario?
Well, I think a couple things. One is agencies obviously are working on their plans. I'm sure even still now with the continuing resolution passed, but they will let their employees know who basically is essential, who isn't, who do they need to report to work, who should stay home and not work. Basically, feds are not allowed to volunteer work for free. They will be told you cannot do any federal work while you're off if you are furloughed. I've basically seen that interpreted as meaning no, you cannot even plug into your federal networks, telework from home, possibly not even use your federal BlackBerry or iPhone, whatever you might have from your office if you have a smartphone. So obviously, you know, feds cannot use their purchase card, their travel cards, that sort of thing, unless it is for accepted activities. All that said, you know, as I mentioned before, agency managers are responsible for making sure that the shutdown proceeds in a smooth way. So not all communication will be shut off, of course. There will be communication to the extent that it supports a smooth transition to and from a shutdown.
Mm-hmm. And then just chime in here, I think it's sort of stating the obvious, but there will clearly be huge differences in the way different departments are treated. I was talking to somebody who was a top Pentagon official back during the 95-96 shutdowns. He said there was basically no impact on the Defense Department. Likewise, for the Department of Veterans Affairs, since you know, they run this huge network of VA medical centers, those are mostly, almost everybody there came to work back in 95, 96. The one significant impact was on the Veterans Benefits Administration, which did furlough a lot of people and presumably would do so again.
Well, I know I would think kind of a rule of thumb is if you were told during the shutdown of last year when we had that 31 inches of snow, if you were told you had to come to work, you were deemed essential or emergency or whatever term they were using at the time, then you're probably going to be considered essential this time.
It's hard to say. I mean, obviously with that snowstorm, I think there was an expectation that the interruption in service would last maybe a couple of days or so. With this, it's far more uncertain. So I think managers are going to have to think twice about who they can essentially operate without for an extended period, and that might change the equation a bit.
So again, not your father's shutdown, not the 95-96 shutdown because of the way government's changed.
Yeah, another point is, and I've seen this question come up, what does this mean if I'm on paid leave, holiday or annual leave, sick leave, what have you? And the latest that I've seen on that is that basically all paid leave would be interrupted with this. So don't expect that will still allow you to collect a paycheck.
So don't put in for vacation 2 weeks from now in anticipation that there's going to be a shutdown because you might not get paid for it. Would that mean you might not ever get paid for it? It would have been a non-event? It was as if you hadn't applied, you just didn't work and didn't get paid?
It could, yeah. If Congress doesn't make it whole, yes. And obviously, your listener who emailed with the unemployment, that is an option that some feds might take if it goes long enough, and depending on what their state unemployment rules are.
Yeah, that's just it's almost in the realm of science fiction. Sean, I know you track the Postal Service pretty closely. They're not affected by this, at least directly, are they?
No. They receive no taxpayer support for operations, so no, they would not be affected, they tell me, in any way by this.
What about, and you have agencies like the Comptroller of the Currency and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and some others that operate based on fees they get from customers, banks, and that sort of thing. Do you have any idea what their status might be?
They would continue to operate, and there are quite a number of agencies that do have these kind of special operating authorizations. They operate on a fee-based model, and you even have that at agencies within, kind of traditional appropriated departments, like Department of Defense or what have you. A lot of those agencies, for instance, Defense Finance and Accounting Service and some of the others, they view themselves as basically service providers. They get paid basically for providing support services to the military. And there's a number of federal agencies out there that do that, providing essentially fee-based services either to other federal agencies or to stakeholders out in the public.
Well, that's a good point. And there are places you wouldn't think of: interior, agriculture. I heard from a DEA agent last week, and he said during the last shutdown, he was, I think he was in Miami, but he said their unit, which had something to do with monitoring or testing drugs, their unit was self-supporting because it depended on fees from the users or the clients, and so they kept going when many of the top people were furloughed.
Yeah, that's right. And so, again, I think we've seen more of that kind of a model since the last shutdown 15 years ago. So again, that goes to your question: should we expect to see fewer people furloughed? And I think that's one factor in that as well.
Well, you mentioned earlier that I think there's legislation in the Senate that would cut off congressional pay, or at least Senate pay, as well as the president, in the event of a shutdown. Of course, that would have to pass the Congress, and it might be the way that the House and the Senate are so contentious now, one might accept it and the other might not. But what about things like the rest of the legislative branch, Library of Congress, Government Accounting Office, and the judiciary? Would they be impacted by this?
They sure would. Yeah, they get an appropriation just like the other branches of government, and so yes, they would be affected. On your point on the accepting the president and Congress when it comes to pay, that bill passed unanimously in the Senate, and I'd be surprised if it didn't do the same in the House.
It would be interesting to be the one person who voted against it,
yeah.
And so we know they'd be going forever. Well, listen, gents, thanks very much for being with us this week. Very educational, and I'm going to keep watching the Federal Times and see what you guys are working on and tracking down, and we'll talk to you again there this time next week. So thanks a lot.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thank you for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, it's archived. You can listen anytime you want and tell a friend and pass it on. I think what Steve Watkins and Sean Riley had to say about the shutdown, even with the uncertainties, is very educational. So give us a listen. We'll be back here next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Till then, have a good week.